Let's see what the stew has in store for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, Gnome Stew's Tabletop Gaming Event Podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by awesome Patreon backers like the bombastic Bob Queck, the miraculous Michelle Shepherdson, and the durable Dungeon Masters Block. Today, we have me, Ange, along with Josh and JT, and we are going to have a conversation about how to teach new game rules, new game systems, new rules, new mechanics, whatever it is, how do we convey all this information to our players? Before we dive into that main topic, though, we're going to ask a get-to-know-a-gnome question. What is an old game system that you wouldn't mind bringing back to the table? JT, I'm going to start with you.
Oh, I'd love to give me some Cyberpunk 2020 back to the table. I ran it for years and years and years as the source books were steadily being released by Artelsorian Games in the early 90s. I can't count how many campaigns or little one-shots I've run in Cyberpunk 2020. It was probably my go-to game for a solid 3 years, maybe four. I was also running a lot of second edition D&D during the time, so I'd have like a couple, three different groups going at once. But yeah, I just have a strong love for Cyberpunk in general, not Cyberpunk 2020, but Cyberpunk as a genre.
Mm-hmm.
And CP 2020 just captured it so well with the system and setting and feels and all the NPCs and all the good fun that can come with that entire setup. I actually got to play in a year-long campaign once. It was only three of us, Game Master, me, and another fellow as players. But we had a hoot with the entire go. I really miss it, and I'd love to get it back to the table, but I've got one guy in my current group who's highly resistant to Cyberpunk in general as a genre and, you know, as a system. So I don't know if it'll ever hit the table with the current group because I want everybody involved, not, you know, one person sitting there being grumpy.
Yeah, it's always a balance of what is the whole group going to be interested in.
Yeah.
What about you, Josh?
So this is a tough question for me because I don't have nostalgia for old systems. I feel like we've like made a lot of quality of life changes as like an RPG community, and I don't want to go backwards on any of those. So it'd have to be something like idiosyncratic that you can't find right now. I would love to play in another like World of Darkness game, you know, something along those lines, but they have updated systems that are much easier to use. The podcast that I love, Play to Find Out, they've played games like Noblis or Ghostbusters. I've never played those before and I would love to play them, but I don't want to like cheat and just grab one that they had already done. So I think what I would love to go backwards and play is the Dragonlance Saga system with the cards that they spun off into like the Marvel role-playing saga game. I love cards, and if it like apes tarot cards in any way, I'm there. And I remember like buying up a whole bunch of the books and supplements because I found it right around the time that TSR was like phasing it out because nobody liked it, but I loved it. Mm-hmm. And I would love to try to play that again. Unfortunately, I didn't keep any of that stuff. So
Josh.
There was a leak in our garage at one point, and I lost like all of my original Planescape books, and I lost the Dragonlance Saga system. So
I was thinking about possibly mentioning Shadowrun because a friend recently brought up the idea of running it, and I've always loved the Shadowrun setting, but I have no desire to play with those mechanics. You know, I'll play it in whatever system the GM wants to run it in, but it's Shadowrun has always been kind of my, to use a Moby Dick reference, my white whale. It's the game I have always loved the setting of, but have never been able to get into a campaign of. But the game I was actually going to say that I would be willing to play right now, this moment, Marvel Saga.
Yes.
Yep, the one with the cards. Because it's so easy to grasp the mechanics of how the cards work and lean into the various ways they jive with that superhero setting. It is nearly impossible to find an actual deck of the cards to buy these days that is not ridiculously expensive. I had friends, when we were playing it more frequently around 2010 or so, they actually bought a deck off of eBay and it cost them $300.
Ooh.
And I am sure it is even more than that. I will say, though, there are PDFs floating out there on the internet, and it is very easy to just print them out and put them in card sleeves with a deck of bicycle cards to give them some weight. That's actually what I have my deck of them, because I did not discover it until probably the late 2000s, so I missed out on getting an actual copy of them, but it's a fun game.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder if there's like a Foundry module for the Saga system. It's not quite the same when you're playing online, though. Like, I want to feel the cards. Like, you want to have the hand of cards. That's part of the appeal.
Here on the Gnomecast, we've had episodes in the past about how we as GMs learn new game systems, but we've never really dug into how to teach new game rules to our players. So we're going to go over what are some best practices to get our groups up to speed on new rules, systems, mechanics, whatever have you. First question, though, is when's the last time you had to teach the rules of a game to your players? Josh?
The game that I mostly GM is Pathfinder 2E, and my players love that system, so I have not had to teach them anything. They end up teaching me more of the rules, which is great. I love it.
Good players love it.
Yes. We were going to play a Wild Sea game. Like, our local group was going to do like a little interim campaign because one of our players had a baby. And so was like going to duck out for a while. And we're like, well, let's do something that's just four of us instead, since he's busy. And we're like, let's do Wild Sea. I brought that to the table. We didn't actually get to play the first session, but we'd had our session zero, which involved teaching the rules and how it worked. And we can get into like details of that later. But yeah, that was about a year ago.
What about you, JT?
It was probably a little over a year ago, maybe a year and a half around there somewhere. Oh, no, maybe it was 2 years ago. Anyway, I had to teach the rules of an RPG that I designed with two other friends. We had me as the game master and six total players, two of which had helped design the game, so it was brand new to four of the players. And of course, since I'm the main writer on the books, so basically all the rules that we co-designed filtered through my brain and came out as text into the books. So I knew the rules very, very well, because I'm the guy that typed them all up. You know, we're playtesting, and everybody was well aware that we're playtesting a brand new game, and you know, and we had done some micro playtests with just the three of us, the three designers, to exercise like little bits and pieces here and there, but we'd actually never brought the whole thing to the table. So I had to educate four people on what we had created. And during the course of the playtesting, I made tons of what I called rulings, not rules. You know, where somebody found a gap in a rule or just a mistake in the rule that needed fixing. And one of my other designers, Bill, he was one of the players. Since I was busy running the game and doing the rulings, not rules, and keeping track of NPCs and monsters and all the typical Game Master stuff, Bill was responsible for taking notes about the mechanics themselves. And between sessions, we would review Bill's notes and update the rules text to fix whatever had broken during the course of each session. Campaign lasted 4 months, 5 months, around there somewhere, and we took a step back and took a serious look at the complexity of the game, and it was too much. There were moments I struggled to run my own game. Just the mechanics were too much, and we tore it down, and we have rewritten about 80% of the system in supporting material, streamline, simplify, make the gameplay less onerous on the GMs and players, all that good stuff. We're 95% done with that massive rewrite. We have a little bit of magic to rewrite, and I hope to get the version 2.0 of the rules to the table maybe late this summer.
Man, that's awesome.
We're real close to getting there. So
very cool.
Yeah, that's great.
That's one of those examples you really have to put the pedal to the metal and test out the game system with a variety of players to get the feel for whether or not it's going to work, because it can work really well in your head.
Oh yeah.
If it doesn't work at the table, that's something completely different.
And also a really great example for like teaching the rules, right? Because there's like all that discussion of like rules as intended. Well, you're the one who's intending it, right?
Yep.
You've got to make sure that's communicated correctly, and then you've got to go back and make sure that you continue that communication in the rewrites and stuff. So
right, yeah, we're gonna have to, when we get it back to the table, the four people that are not involved in the game design who have played the old version, I'm going to have to uneducate them. right? I have to. Yeah. They have to unlearn how it was so they can relearn how it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
For me, because I do a lot of convention games, I need to be prepared to teach the game system anytime I sit down to run with strangers at a con, because I do not expect people to come to the table knowing the game system. I'm generally not running D&D. I'm running other game systems like Tales from the Loop, Vaesen, Savage Worlds, a wide variety of things that somebody, they probably were interested in the write-up, but may not know the system. So I'm prepared to kind of walk them through the basics. It's really a good way to approach a con game. Now, I did get my home group playing Tales of the Valiant last year, but because that's a 5e variant, they knew a lot of the core mechanics anyway. It was just a lot of reminders on the differences, like Tales of the Valiant doesn't have inspiration. It has luck. It works in a very different way. Those little things that had to be reminded. And there's still some people who are just, like, I have a couple of players who just play it like it's 5e and are completely missing some of the Tales of the Valiant mechanics. But, you know, there comes a point where I'm like, if you're not going to figure out how to, like, make your character sing with the mechanics that are available, I'm not going to force you to use them.
Right.
For more on system burn-in, see our previous Gnomes 2 episode.
Right.
So how much of the rules do you think the GM has to have down before bringing it to the table?
Get the core mechanics down pat, like, you know, whatever the baseline, you know, you roll a d20 to hit, or Savage World, you get your d6 and your skill die, whatever it is, you know, fate, roll your four dice, whatever the base core mechanics, get those down, know those inside and out. Then there's going to be subsystems tacked on, and hopefully they lean into the core mechanic approach. But find the ones that you think are commonly going to occur during your game and get those fairly well known as well. For the weird esoteric things, have a grasp of them, have read the rules. You don't need to memorize them. If your gaming group is deep into combat, but they're like, nobody ever tries to trip or grapple, don't read those, or read those rules, but don't memorize those rules, because they may never come up. And that's what the rule books are for. And have a good idea where in the book find things. You know, don't rely on just the table of contents or the index or whatever. Actually know, or even have like little sticky bookmarks that you can, you know, the little tags that you can put in your book so you have like a quick reference. I know, we always give the advice, don't look up rules in the middle of a session, but if it's a brand new game to a lot of the players or all the players, that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. That, you know, that's perfectly fine. You're learning and it's going to slow down the game. That latency is acceptable.
Yeah.
And I always do a quick reference sheet that's, you know, as you're making the reference sheet, don't just go find one online. Make your own. Mm-hmm. Make your own GM screen. And I advise to don't copy paste. Do not just screenshot if you're coming out of a PDF. Actually fire up Excel or whatever spreadsheet program you use and make your own tables and charts and copy, you know, so the act of typing in all this information will help sink it into your brain a little deeper.
But JT, the design of the spreadsheet isn't going to look as pretty as what I can cut and paste from the book.
I know, I agree, but you're building a tool, not a piece of art.
And if you practice enough, you can get it to look that pretty.
Well, true, you could.
I want it to look pretty. Yeah. No, I totally get what you're saying. I do think it is okay to have some screenshotting in front of you.
Yeah.
You know, if that's an easy way for you to get it. But it is, I know for me, writing it down does really help cement it into my brain a lot better than otherwise.
Yeah. And different people learn different way. There's a lot of visual learners where they glance at a table, they got it down, they just need to copy, you know, screenshot, copy paste, whatever it is. Me, I'm a visual kinesthetic learner, meaning I have to see it and do it in order for it to really sink in mm-hmm. to my brain deeply enough that I retain it.
JT, I have your Gnome Stew article about making your own GM screen bookmarked in my bookmark folder because I use that cool. every time I start a new system.
Awesome. Man, that article is ancient now. It's probably 5 years old.
Still useful.
Yeah. Evergreen content. Yep. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this question, Josh?
So much like how I prep my games session beforehand, I kind of learn the rules a session beforehand. So I think before you bring it to the table, you need to know enough of the rules for the encounters that you've got planned for that session. As you run the game more, you can bring in more of those subsystems, like JT said. And of course, yes, know where they are in the book. Use bookmarks or tabs or bookmark in your PDF or however you do it. Your mileage is going to vary based on the kind of system that you are running and the kind of prep style that you're running. I like to prep like a handful of encounters, so I know what systems I'm going to need. And in a crunchy system like Pathfinder 2E, that means I don't have to know all of Pathfinder 2E before I come to the game. But if it's a more narrative game like Public Access that you don't actually prep a lot for, then you're probably going to actually have to know the whole book before you come to the table. The upside of that is that there aren't a lot of subsystems in those style of games where it's more create the game at the table sort of play. I really think that you can skip the character specific rules. Those should be the player's responsibility, in my opinion.
I will say you should understand how to make characters.
Yes.
Because you're going to need to walk your players through that. Ultimately, I think a lot of this depends on your mileage may vary. It depends on your end goal. If you are planning on running this at a convention for strangers, you need to know the game better than if you are running it for your regular weekly group and everyone is on board to just try a new game. People at conventions have paid to be at that convention, signed up for your game, and they are expecting to experience that game. They don't want to be sitting there while you're flipping through a book or hemming and hawing about the way something is supposed to work. You know, you really want to be on your game better. So if you are going to run a new game system to you at a convention, semi-professionally, whatever, you're going to want to do a play test.
Yeah.
Test it out with some friends first. If it's your home group, man, a lot of times when I want to run a new game for my players, I'm like, yeah, let's make this game and I'll help them make characters and I'll understand the basic core mechanic. And then we get into it and I'm like, I don't know how this is actually supposed to work. So we're going to figure it out together. There are times where I run a new game for the very first time and I run it completely wrong, but everyone has fun at the table. And by the time I'm done, I understand all of the mistakes I made. Mm-hmm. I actually did that with Tales from the Loop the first time I ran it. I really did not understand the way it was supposed to work. So we just kind of fumbled through it, but everyone had a great time. It was a really emotional session, really good. But when I went back and reread the rules, I'm like, oh, okay, that's what I was screwing up, which meant that the next time I ran it, which I was running it at a con, I could be better prepared for how it's actually supposed to work.
And also at a con, like, you're going to hand them a pre-made character. So
hopefully.
Usually, yes. Hopefully, yeah.
And so, like, it's a lot lighter of a lift for the GM to, like, know how those characters work. If I'm coming in as a new Pathfinder 2nd Edition GM, like, there are so many I don't even know how many classes are available and variations on those classes, because they put out new ones with, like, every major book. They put out at least, like, two with every major book, and then there's, like, three, you know, subclasses within that. And, like, I'm not going to memorize every single class and how it works.
Right.
Oh, no.
If I were going to run it at a convention, however, and, like, there's going to be, like, six pre-made characters, then yeah, I will want to learn how those characters work.
Well, if you're going to run it at a convention, you're probably going to have six pre-made characters that are relatively well balanced against each other, are going to work together well. Hopefully you're not going to end up with people stepping on each other's toes too much. I have had experiences where it's like, oh, just bring a character, and somebody makes a monster that is completely game legal but just steamrolls everyone else in the game.
Yep.
What do you cover with your group before the first session?
Yeah, so rules wise, like setting and expectations and all of the normal session zero stuff aside, rules wise, I want to cover the core loop of the game. Like, this is how we roll. This is what a success looks like. This is what a failure looks like. If there are degrees of success and failure, if you are meant to fail, like if we're running a horror game and like people should die, that needs to be laid out, and like how that happens, because that's going to affect the choices that they're going to make in character creation, and it'll help them set expectations. And then outside of that, I can usually trust most of my players to get the rules and then read them on their own and come to session one with at least like a novice introductory idea of what we're going to be doing.
J JT, how about for your groups?
Yeah, same thing. The core loop, basic mechanics. I make a one sheet, so two pages, you know, one sheet front and back, that is a quick reference of all the basics. And that will hopefully allow, like Josh said, guide the players through character creation choices. So if somebody wants to make a thief-type character, they know what attributes to put points into, what skills to acquire, things of that nature, right? If somebody wants to be the, you know, to pick an archetype, they can build toward that archetype. I also go run through basic examples, like what a skill check looks like, what initiative looks like. That's pretty important. And sometimes it's more complex than roll a d20, add your dex mod. And I also walk through what a simple attack, defense, damage sequence looks like in similar items. I don't go into magic because those magic are 100% exceptions to the base rules in every game ever made. Because you have, this is how the rules work, unless you cast a spell. And then all that's out the window. I don't go through what all the different spells do or what all the feats do. Fortunately, with most feat-based systems, you're going to have, what, one or two feats at most per character starting out with. I never start above first level when teaching a new game, just to keep it simple for the players.
And for you.
If everybody knows the game, yeah, I might start at third or fifth. Or, you know, if I have this really hot-burning module adventure that I want to run and you have to be eighth level to get in the door, then we're going to start at 8th level, whatever. But when it's a brand new game, brand new players to the rules and mechanics, there are going to be brand new characters fresh out of the character factory at 1st level.
And there is nothing wrong with, if you are starting a new game system that has a level mechanic, there's nothing wrong with starting at 1st level and quickly getting up to the tier where things are more interesting.
Oh yeah, agreed.
You know, like do a session, their 1st level for their first adventure, and then immediately level up to 2nd. You don't need to do a full-on accounting level of XP in those early levels. You want to get to the cool stuff, but you want to make sure everyone has the foundational understanding of the mechanics to get there. It's kind of what I did with the Tales from the Valiant campaign I'm running. You know, we very quickly went, you know, one adventure was 1st level, one adventure was 2nd level. Then after getting to 3rd level, it's like, okay, now we're taking a little more time to explore the world and the game, and because they're a little beefier, they're a little, they have more interesting stuff to do.
And they have more mechanics to juggle.
Yeah. Now, when I'm coming to session zero, I will very often give my players a PDF snippet of character creation rules so they can look them over. So when they come to session zero, they have an understanding of some of the things we're going to be doing to making characters. I'll obviously cover the core loop of how dice are rolled or cards are played to decide what happens with the characters. But I'll also definitely go over the character sheet and what their stats and abilities will mean during play. Because the better the player understands the character on the sheet in front of them, the easier it is going to be for you as the GM to just run the world and the monsters and keep everything moving forward. If you have to constantly stop and help the players with what's on their character sheet, and you should if they are having questions, but the more you have to do that, the more it slows everything else down.
Yeah. And along the lines of character sheets, when I'm teaching a new game, I know different games have like different variants of character sheets out there from different designers. You can find a bajillion ones for all sorts of different games. I require all my players to have the same format of character sheet. That way, if they have a question of, where do I find my armor class? I can tell them it's on the left-hand side halfway down. But if they're using some weird-ass variant character sheet, I'm going to be like, you're on your own, man. I don't know. I don't have your sheet format in front of me. If you had stuck with standard one, I could tell you exactly where to find your AC, your hit points, your skills, your inspiration, your whatever. But you had to go be weird, so you're in your own boat. Good luck.
When I started running Victoriana for an occasional Sunday in-person game, I got so frustrated with the initial character sheet that they released with the game, which is still coming. They haven't actually shipped the books yet. The initial character sheet that I actually made my own for my players so I could have everyone like have everything in the same spot and be written out in a way that I knew would make more sense to them.
That's helpful too, yeah.
what is your method for teaching new rules, systems, or mechanics when you're actually at the table?
I steal from video game tutorials. so I'll set up scenarios, in the sessions. If it's not like a pre-written intro game, which kind of does the same thing anyway. But I will, I'll try to set up scenarios where the rules are going to come into play. Like, depending on how new the system is, like if it's just like a variant of something that we're familiar with, then I won't worry about it too much. But if it's like drastically different, then I will be a little heavy handed and maybe like a little bit railroady, at least for like the first hour or so, to be like, you're in the tavern and a guy comes up to you and is like, hey, you spilled my drink. You know, here is the part where we're going to roll initiative. Like, I hopefully in the moment I do it a little more artfully than that. But I have done it that heavy handed before. And just so that like in the first session, they get a taste for how the mechanics work.
Yeah.
It's great if like all of the characters start vibing with each other and they go like deep into, you know, role play mode and, you know, fall into their characters and start talking about everything. But if we spend the whole session doing that, then no one's learned how things are going to work. And then that's going to make session two harder. So
I'm with you. I believe treating it like a video game tutorial can be great, especially if you're also dealing with newbie players who don't have a lot of experience with other RPGs because they've probably played a video game. I like to start with something social roleplay oriented to start with, to get the feel for how to roleplay, to reinforce that I want them to roleplay. And basically, there's going to be a lot of, especially with brand new players, there's probably going to be a lot of blank stares to start with as they're not sure how to do it. But like starting that like shows them this is what this is. And then the next thing, some sort of skill challenge. You know, maybe not a full on skill challenge, but definitely something where they're going to be rolling dice to see how skills work, that type of thing. And then eventually do a combat encounter, which will work through a lot of those abilities. But you take it piecemeal, one step at a time. I definitely do not try and info dump the rules on them to start with.
Right.
Yeah.
General thing. It's like you're going to roll a d20, especially if we're talking a D&D game. You're going to roll a d20 and you're going to add this to it. Or if I'm running one of the Year Zero engine games, like Tales from the Loop or Basin. Okay, you're going to take this number and this number. That's a pool of d6s. You're going to roll all those and you're going to tell me if you got a six. How many sixes did you get? Because that's what you need to succeed at doing this thing, you know, and then slowly work on the other stuff from there. But definitely introducing it in pieces works. What about you, JT?
I try to touch all the major sections of the character sheet with rules. So that includes, like, you know, you both of you already mentioned skill checks. There's a chunk on your character sheet with a list of skills and numbers next to them. So I'll be like, okay, you're trying to climb a wall. Let's do an athletics check or whatever the appropriate skill is, right? Oh, okay, you made it. Okay, next person needs to climb the wall. And they're like, player A had a +5. I have a -1. Does that mean I can do it? I was like, yes, maybe not, but you can try, right? You know, are you going to help? And maybe we introduce, like, helping each other accomplish a skill check, a group skill check kind of thing. I try to work one of those in the first session. So they can see how they can work as a team, not just as a whole bunch of disparate individuals. Obviously in combat, we're going to be talking about their armor class, their hit points, their weaponry, maybe a offensive spell of some kind. But I try to move around the character sheet, saving throws or resistance checks, whatever they're called in the game. I just try to make sure that all of the pertinent big blocks of the character sheet are somehow brought into gameplay.
Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it.
And for your specialty rules, grappling, tripping, flank, all that, I don't do that to the PCs until that particular thing has been introduced. If they manage to run into flank between two monsters, I do not give the monsters +2. I don't even mention there's flank. I don't even mention there's advantage. Just the two monsters attack with their base go, and that's it. When a monster, and I will intentionally do this, have a monster step into flank between two PCs, and I'll be like, oh, look, the monster messed up. He's between the two of you, both have +2 to hit. One of you is a rogue. Guess what? You get your backstabby stuff along with it, right? And as I introduce those, once the PCs have leveraged a special rule, that unlocks it for the monsters as well.
I really like that. That's a really great way of easing them into it, turning up the heat as the frogs are sitting in the water.
There you go. Yep. Just a little bit at a time. You know, I try not to do more than like two special things per combat in the first session or per skill check or per whatever. That way I'm not overwhelming them. Because if all of a sudden there's a flank with a grapple and a potential trip check, boom, all at once, they're learning three new mechanics and they're not going to stick.
We talked earlier about how it's better to leave the players to understand how their character works, but I do think, especially when you're bringing in a new system, it is a good idea to remind them of things on their character sheet that they may not have thought about using. Like you mentioned the rogue with the sneak attack. It can sometimes be helpful to remind the rogue, hey, if you do this, you'll get in position to have your sneak attack damage.
Oh, yeah.
I was running for my nieces, and they were fifth level, so they had some of the more powerful spells, and I very specifically set up an encounter that was great for Fireball, and I had to, like, gently be like, hey, you probably want to cast the Fireball this time. She's like, are you sure? Don't I want to save it? And I'm like, no. Look at how they're all clumped together perfectly. You're going to get 15 of them in that.
Nice.
This is really when you want to do it. And she's like, oh, okay. You know, especially when you're dealing with new players who haven't had experience with play culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a lot of unspoken etiquette and rules about the way we engage with the game. That it sometimes we don't remember that some of these need to be explained. The one I always think of is the very first time I ran a game for my nieces. They were, I think the oldest one was 14. So the other two were 12 and 10, maybe even a little younger. They basically got to the opening of the cavern system that these goblins were in. And there were three paths in front of them. And the three of them went, we should each take a different path.
Uh-oh.
And I was like, okay, they've never heard don't split the party. They've never heard about any of that. So let's have a little bit of a conversation about, well, what happens if Feltheus goes down this hallway with his wizard armor class and his two hit points that he has after the first fight and runs into some goblins? And they're like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess we should stick together. So it's like, there is also that aspect of teaching new players when you're also teaching a new system. Sometimes there may be some etiquette and stuff involved that you want to bring up as well.
For more on splitting the party, see one of our previous Gnomes Do episodes on.
Yeah, there you go.
I have a great story about like table culture kind of in the same vein. And I was running a Battlestar Galactica game. The people at the table were super into the roleplay and they were really good at the roleplay. And like it's Battlestar Galactica, so there was like a huge political component to like an intergroup personal like political component, and like not all of the PCs were on the same side of everything, which made it even juicier. One of my players, who was a new player, was like going real hard into like the political campaign and like trying to convince people. And like at one point, she just got like, I just can't figure out what to say to convince this person. I'm like, well, you could roll for it. And she's like, wait, that's an option?
Oh,
she was new to role playing games, but she was such a good role player that I completely forgot that she didn't even think that you could like pick up the dice and like roll if you personally couldn't think of the exact words to say.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
That's awesome. So do you handle one shots differently?
Oh, yeah, I definitely I handle one shots. I drive it like I stole it. Again, unlike you, Ange, I do not run convention games. So if we're playing a one shot, it's with my normal table and it's a game we want to try out. I will go into that with a loosey-goosey grasp of the system and everybody else can be like, yeah, let's give this a shot. Let's try it. Did we have fun? Yes. Awesome. Did we know what we were doing? Nope. That's okay. Do we want to try and make a campaign out of this? If yes, then let's dive into it and like figure out what we did right and what we did wrong. And that actually kind of makes it a little easier the next time we come to the table of like, oh, right, this system was completely wrong. Here is what it is. It'll like pin that in your brain of like, this is the right way to do it now.
Yeah,
I'm with Josh on this one. I don't do a lot of convention games, player or game master. All my vacation convention time is for my author career stuff. So, yeah, I don't get a lot of gaming convention time in. But yeah, I'm with Josh here. Fast and loose with the rules. You've heard me say this already. Rulings, not rules. I try to be consistent. So if I've ruled, done a ruling a particular way, I try to do it that way again, unless somebody points out, hey, the rules say it's totally different. You know, and I'm like, okay, cool. Well, if it makes sense to adjust, I'll lean into the rules as written. If it doesn't, we'll just go with my ruling until we play it again, if we make a campaign out of it or whatever. And all of my rulings lean toward the favor of the PCs, because if you're constantly beating them down and telling them, oh, your plus 40 to jump really is only plus 12 because I said so, that's no fun.
Yeah.
Let her rip. Let's have some fun. Let's do some wild and crazy shenanigans.
As I said, I do tend to do more convention one-shots, and I expect my players to be more willing to roll with the game and not be too caught up in trying to know every mechanic before the game starts. Obviously, I'll cover the core mechanic, what dice they're going to need at the table, and go over the character sheet and what their general stats mean. But if it's a one-shot at the table, and unless it has been advertised specifically as a tutorial game, which I don't do, I want to get right into the gameplay and the story of the game we're going to be playing. And so that means I will very often, you know, let them know mechanics and rules as we get to them, rather than trying to like info dump at the very beginning. You know, I want them to know this is where your character stats mean. This means what you're good at. This is how you can do this special thing. But otherwise, we're just going to get right into the role playing and right into the cool stuff of this game, you know, and hopefully it's enough that the player feels confident playing the game, but doesn't feel completely lost because they don't know the game before they start.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I never worry about knowing a game before I play it at a con, and it has only been some very rare instances where I've ever gotten any, as a player, where I've ever gotten any pushback for that. There was a Shadowrun game back in the late 2000s where the guys at the table were all upset that I didn't actually remember, you know, hadn't actually played that edition of Shadowrun, and it's like, oh my god, come on. It's usually with the more crunchy games that you get the people who get very upset if you don't already know the mechanics. It's like, come on, man, I'm here to roll some dice, have some fun, and tell a cool story.
I also don't look at menus before I go to a restaurant, so I feel like it's kind of like the same energy of like, if I'm gonna play a one shot, I'm gonna like sit down and I'm gonna figure it out like in the moment.
Yeah
I personally don't need to like know what my order is going to be before I sit down. I know there are other people that sounds like their own personal version of hell, but that's not
You know, I'm sitting here thinking about it and I'm like, you know what? Because I tend to be the cat herder that is organizing the outing of the restaurant, I will look at the menu ahead of time, but it's not for myself. It's to make sure there's something on there for the person I know who has an allergy or is finicky or whatever. So it's more of the cat herding thing than me needing to know what the restaurant has.
Oh, you're the food captain.
Food captain, there you
food
go.
Food captain. There's a great show on Dropout called the Smarty Pants Society, and they do like PowerPoint presentations of funny topics, and one of them is convincing them that every group needs a food captain that does exactly that, and
nice. So, but to Josh's point of not looking at the menu, I will look at the menu, but not really pick out food. God, this is a horrible metaphor. metaphor, right? But it works. Just roll with it. Just roll with it. So I will, before proposing a new game to my group, I will flip through the rules. If it says D6 dice pool, I delete the PDF and move on. Seriously. If it says we're going to, you know, roll D4s and add them all together, I delete the PDF and move on, because D4s are a pain in the ass to physically pick up. And I have neuropathy in one hand due to a trauma, a car crash thing. One of my players has a neurological syndrome of some kind. He has shaky hands. So picking up your standard pyramid-shaped D4 is physically difficult for him.
Mm.
If there's a physical impediment to the game, or if it says, hey, we're going to use a Jenga tower, Dread, fantastic game. Wonderful game. we cannot play it because of two of us are physically incapable of really doing it well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I will look at the menu, and if there's something I'm allergic to in the rules, I move on. Yeah. There you go. I have closed out the metaphor. There you go.
Yeah, my husband has a whole rant about like the probability of D6s versus other die types.
Uh-huh.
Especially in like stat pool systems. Yeah. And
yeah,
I have friends who will willingly play my Year Zero engine games, like Tales from the Loop, Vaisen, because they enjoy my games, but they will bitch about the system. How much effort do you put into later game sessions and the new rules?
So, like I said, I like to, you know, layer things in as we move on. And I feel like it's like a collaborative effort with the table. Pathfinder 2E is actually a great example of this, because Paizo updates and clarifies rules and puts out erratas pretty much every time they put out a new major book. They even did a rule overhaul a couple years back that was essentially like Pathfinder 2.5E instead of 2E. And we have to like sit down and we have to decide like what we're going to follow and what we're going to ignore. And it's especially important when you're playing online with a system like Foundry, because if Paizo updates something, the Foundry module that we use will update the system for the roles that we're making, right? So we have to know ahead of time, like, are we going to play with these new rules? Now that is getting like deep into campaigns. And I plan like a session ahead of time, usually with my prep. When we're learning a new system, if I see that we're gravitating towards, like, let's say one of the characters is a grappler and they're a wrestler, so they're like going hard into the grapple rules, right? That's a system that you're going to need to know. But like also everybody else is like a plate wearer, so I'm not going to worry about the swimming rules unless I want to throw that challenge in their face. If I don't have a need for those rules, I'm not going to worry about learning them until they come up in the game.
So for me, it depends on the complexity of the mechanics. So like say something simple like fate. Pretty much everybody's on board by the end of the first session on how to create an aspect, how to use their aspects, how to deal with compel, so on and so forth.
Or at least you hope they are.
I hope so. I hope so. Oof. Man, if you haven't caught on to fate at the end of 4 hours of playing, that's going to be a painful campaign to play or run. Perhaps for the more crunchy games like Pathfinder 1E in that era of D&D, you know, it could take 3, 4, 5 sessions to really get a new player on board with the core loop, all the exceptions that apply to their character and everything they can do. And by that time, they're leveling up to second, maybe even third level, which now adds more spells, more feats, more exceptions to the baseline. And then you're learning those as you level up. Fortunately, those learning as the characters level up is typically a slow trickle, so you don't. It's not going to be overwhelming to a person who's brand new to tabletop role playing in general.
Yeah.
It just depends on the game mechanic.
As you get deeper into the campaign with like classes like that too, you can as a GM start to learn the class rules a little bit more, right? Because you're not looking at 20 classes; you're looking at 4, 5, or 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that'll help you craft it for the characters.
I think any game that has tiers and levels and that type of thing where the characters get more powerful as they advance, any game that is designed for a long campaign generally is going to have ways for characters to advance. Although, Traveler, you confuse me on this. Anyway, there's going to be introduction of new rules the higher you go up the level system, the more powerful they get. While hopefully everyone understands the core nature of how their character works, when you start getting into those more powerful and unique abilities, you're going to need to revisit things. And then, of course, as we mentioned earlier, there is also system screen burn. Mm-hmm. And no matter how long you've been playing a game, if it's similar to another game, you can start having rules drift as people confuse which one is which. You know, with the Tales of the Valiant game, I have been running it for a year now, and I still have to remind people, okay, you missed that roll, you get to take a luck.
Right.
You know, it's just to keep that currency, that meta currency in the game flowing for them.
One of the things that I've found when running a system with a level in it is that oftentimes your players will, let's say, build in a gotcha moment into their stats, right? If they are the type, they'll like look for like a wombo combo that they can take. And sometimes if you are like me and you are trying to keep all of those rules in your head, you are going to miss that wombo combo. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's a great thing for the player to be able to pull that out of nowhere. And you're like, you know, in the middle of like a big boss fight and they're like, aha, this plus this equals dead bad guy round one. Booyah. That is an amazing moment for a player to have. Do not try to take that away from them, I don't think.
Agreed.
After they've done it, then you can start figuring out not exactly how to shut it down, but how to make the obstacle more challenging for them.
Yes.
But I don't think, speaking to new GMs who might be worried about those sorts of wombo combos, I don't think that's actually something you need to worry about. I think that's a great moment for the players and that you should definitely let them have it.
Yeah, lead into that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is perfectly okay to have the PCs one-shot your boss if everyone is cheering at the end of that boss dropping without having gotten a chance to go. Let them have that win. You'll figure out how to challenge them later on. Getting out of here, any last pieces of advice on teaching new rules and game systems?
Examples are key. I've already mentioned those. My quick reference sheet, make your own GM screen. Basically, the reference sheet, the GM screen, which I have double-sided GM screen, and almost everything I put on the inside, I put on the outside. The rules are not GM secret sauce. And if they are, you're playing the wrong game or you're not doing it quite right. You should never hide the rules themselves from the players. Yes. Hide your maps and your NPCs and your monsters and your plots and all that. Sure, yeah. All of the above will give the players an idea of the scope and power of things and what they can and can't do with their characters.
Yeah.
And it may aid them in narrowing down their character build and how to build that character.
I would say try to understand your table's learning style. Some people learn better by example. Other people learn better by like doing, like kinesthetic learners, like JT said. Others like to like go away with the book and just like research on their own. I personally love video explainers. I could read a rule or a class, you know, 5, 6, 7 different times, but then I'll watch a YouTube video and I'm like, if you do this and this and this, then the class, like, that's how the class works. I'm like, oh, that's how it's supposed to play. Most of the people at my table like will completely ignore a video tutorial. They have to like read it. They don't like listening to it. So knowing the reading, or not the reading styles, knowing the learning styles of the people at your table will help you be able to teach them better.
Once I do, I can then go and read and understand what I was doing. It's very backwards. Makes it hard to be a GM and run a new game, but there you go. My last piece of advice is be patient and don't forget to focus on the fun of the game, even when you are teaching a new rule system.
Amen.
Oh, real quick. I have one last bit. If you're playing in person, pair up your more experienced role players with the least experienced role players, even if nobody knows the game. Because the people who have played like 80 million different systems like I have, there's some natural flow and progression of just role-playing rules. And there's some nomenclature that just falls into every role-playing game. The brand new people can be helped out by the more experienced people without everybody leaning on you. So buddy system.
Very good point.
Put him like where you're going to seat him at the table too. Like put him next to.
Uh-huh. Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, they're going to be next to each other. Yeah.
This show is funded by the Gnomes Who Patreon. You too can Patreon back by following the Patreon link on the Gnomes Who website, the Gnomes Who Patreon. We love doing this, and our patrons help us keep it going. The Gnomecast is part of the Polygamers Podcast Network, so if you're enjoying us, here's another show to check out.
Thacko with Advantage. Ange and Jared love talking about RPGs and D&D. Together, they share insights into the games they're running in the campaign journal, and then tackle a variety of topics that affect the game in the DM's workshop. They're going to talk anyway, so might as well record it. Maybe you'll even pick up an ancient D&D factoid about a previous edition of the game that you'll never use.
You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, along with GnomeStew on various social medias out there. We may not be super active, but we are out there. Gnomes, is there anything else you want to give a shout out to today?
So I recently found a 5-book series of anthologies about paladin-style characters. And I'm not talking just fantasy stories, but all of the stories are about people that stand up and do what's right in the face of overwhelming odds and powerful evils. The series is called Libri Valoris. I hope I'm saying that right. I'm sorry to the Latin people out there. It's from New Mythology Press, And the list of authors included into each anthology is quite impressive. Like I said, I just found out about it. I've only read a few stories from the first anthology, and they've all been phenomenal. They've all been really good so far. So if you like stories of people doing the right thing, check out the link in show notes. And the link will lead you to the entire series where you can cherry pick book one, book four, book five, whatever. And they're available in print and ebook.
Josh, do you have anything?
Yeah. So talking about books we've discovered recently, I just started reading. Before we started recording, we were having a little mini discussion about Lit RPG. And I recently discovered a cozy Lit RPG called Edge Cases, I think is what the first book is called. You can find it on Amazon. It's like in self-published. It's got a few books out there. But the focus on it is less so on leveling up and more so about the group dynamics of the characters. And also they realize that they are in some sort of game, that there is a system, and they all decide that they want to fight against the system. So it's got some like queer found family themes going on, and also some like damn the man themes that I appreciate, but it's all done within the structure of a Lit RPG. And I'm finding it like incredibly fascinating and a really, really interesting read.
Very cool. From me, The Legend of Vox Machina Season 4 will be dropping today, if you're listening today on June 3rd, when this episode drops for everyone. It's available on Prime Video, and honestly, if you haven't watched, it is a really fun animated interpretation of Critical Role Campaign 1, and everyone I know who I have encouraged to watch it has been very much like, wow, that really is like a role-playing game. So if you haven't watched the animated series, The Legend of Vox Machina, I highly recommend it. So, do you think we all taught the rules of this episode well enough to stay out of the stew?
I hope so. If not, I have to use a secret hidden rule that nobody knows about that gets me out of the pot.
As long as it's not grappling rules, I think we're okay.